From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Floating format tonight. Later on tonight, Bill Weiss joins us. 23 minutes in a place you just don't want to go. He didn't go up when he died. He went down. We'll tell you about that. Here's what's happening. Uh-oh, get ready for this one. A Massachusetts company says it's right on the verge of receiving federal approval to market a quick-growing Atlantic salmon that has been genetically modified with help from the Pacific Chinook salmon. Though genetically engineered crops such as corn and soybeans have been around for several years, if the FDA approves it, and there's all indications it will, the salmon would be the first transgenic animal headed for the dinner table. Aquaculture is a company that is already an $86 billion a year business, with nearly half of all fish consumed globally farm-raised. As wild stocks dwindle and the world's population heads toward 9 billion people, fish farmers will be looking for fish that will be ready to go quicker. Even so, the skeptics abound. Fears persist about possible health risks from genetically modified food in general, but concerns about bioengineered salmon also extend to the environment. Not so sure I'd eat one of those things. Robots attached a new, tighter-fitting cap on top of the gushing Gulf of Mexico oil leak, raising hopes that the crude could be kept from polluting the water for the very first time in nearly 3 months. Placing the cap on top of the leak was the climax of 2 days of delicate preparation work and a day of slowly lowering it into position a mile below the sea. The capping project is just a temporary fix, but the oil giant's best hope now for containing the spill. The next unknown is whether the 18-foot-high, 150,000-pound metal stack of pipes and valves will work. BP plans to start tests on Tuesday, gradually shutting the valves to see if the oil stops or if it starts leaking from another part of the well. Captain Kelly Sweeney with us. Kelly, your take on this new apparatus. What do you think?
Boy, George, to you and all listeners, well, we're all keeping our fingers crossed, and I think this is good news. As you pointed out, they're going to be doing testing in the next 6 to 48 hours starting tomorrow, and we'll just have to hope that everything works out. And the Helix producer has now been connected as well. I mentioned that to the listeners last Friday, and they're starting to get that online and ease into that containing some of the oil. The first relief well that was started May 2nd had a last reported depth of around 17,810 feet.
Jeez.
And so their target is going to be a little bit over 18,000, and so they're starting to get close. And I have one other little tidbit, too, in legal news. Transocean, the outfit that owned the drilling rig Deepwater Horizon, is under investigation in the U.S. and Norway for tax evasion.
Unbelievable. Go figure. All right, Kelly, thanks for the updates. Dozens of vehicles stuck to a road in a heat wave in China after the tarmac melted in the hot sun. The road had just been resurfaced the previous day, and it melted in temperatures which saw the street surface temperature reach as high as 150 degrees Fahrenheit. Vehicles, including cars, buses, taxi cabs, and ambulances, began sticking to the 100-meter stretch of the road. Plastic sheeting had to be laid as a temporary surface to get the traffic moving again there. As Chicago implements its new firearms ordinance, gun advocates have begun a legal assault, filing two separate lawsuits that constitutional law experts said could be the next round of challenges to how cities can regulate personal gun ownership. Less than 2 weeks after the U.S. Supreme Court cleared the way for citizens to have handguns at home, Chicago was hit with lawsuits that target, among other things, the city's ban on gun shops, a controversial and untested regulation that lawyers said could be the next frontier in the battle over firearm rights. John Lott, author of More Guns, Less Crime and the Bias Against Guns, with us. John, what is happening with these city fathers in Chicago? They just keep coming up with these new laws to ban guns.
Right. Well, it's kind of ban light right now. They want to press the envelope. I mean, who knows what the makeup of the Supreme Court's going to be like 4 or 5 years from now when these cases finally reach there. And they're taking a gamble that either the makeup's going to change, or just because you can get five judges, justices right now who say that a complete ban goes too far, maybe you'll lose one of them, like Kennedy, who says, well, you know, you can have these high fees that you have to pay, or you can ban somebody from having a gun in their garage, even if it's all right that they can have a gun in their living room.
Well, and here's the Chicago ordinance: banning gun sales in the city, limiting permit holders to one ready-to-fire weapon in a home, prohibiting guns in garages, porches, and yards. Is this going to hold up, John?
Well, I hope not. I mean, this is the whole problem. We have a very narrowly divided Supreme Court. It's 5-4, and you just have to hope that you can keep all five of the justices that have been on our side in the last two cases will feel the same way. The other side's betting the other way. And if we do lose some case in the future, if they say, well, you can have several hundred dollars in fees to go and register your gun and get the approval, then all that's going to do is encourage them to have even larger fees. They're going to keep on pushing it as far as they can. And you put fees high enough for these other restrictions that you have there. I mean, you're only allowed one operational gun. If you have two residences, you have to decide which one you're going to have it in. You can't have a gun in your business. You're only allowed to have it in your house. You can't. It's as if a family member or you are being attacked in your garage, somehow your ability to defend yourself doesn't extend to your own garage.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, John Lott, thanks so much. John's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Now, this could very well be the green light to go after Iran. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev said that Iran was gaining the ability to build a nuclear bomb. Remarks welcomed in Washington as a sign of growing international unity behind a very tough line toward Tehran. Medvedev's comments were the strongest criticism of Iran's program to emerge from the Kremlin in a very, very long time. Florida wildlife officials say a 10-foot alligator bit off a man's hand while he was swimming in a canal with friends. A Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation spokesperson says an 18-year-old is recovering at a hospital. Officials managed to catch the gator and retrieve the hand from its stomach, and doctors are now thinking about trying to reattach the hand. Bristol-Myers Squibb is recalling 8 production lots of its anti-clotting drug Coumadin because the amount of the active ingredient in the drug could change. The company said the recall is merely a precaution and no side effects have been reported. FICO, which compiles most people's credit ranking, says 25.5% of consumers, or nearly 43.4 million people here, now have a credit score of 599 or below. A score that low, they say, marks you as a poor risk for lenders, making it tougher to get loans and increasing the likelihood that you'll pay more interest. FICO rates people from 300 to 850, and generally speaking, a score above 700 reflects good spending habits. Anything lower, not so much. And Catherine Austin Fitz with us. Catherine, as more and more people get behind in paying their bills, their scores are going to go down, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, George, it's not just that income is falling with unemployment rising and expenses going up as well, but people are making critical choices about, do I feed the kids, or do I pay the mortgage? And having watched the banks get all the bailouts, they've decided to be smart. So I think the attitude is changing about, what comes first in terms of paying the debt. Do you pay the mortgage, or do you continue to try and maintain your lifestyle, or just make sure your kids are safe?
And here's a dilemma, too. Somebody goes to buy a car, and they've got a low credit score, and, a lot of these car companies have their own financing arm. What are they going to do? Turn these people down? They want to sell cars, so they're going to be risking even more, aren't they?
It depends. You know, one possibility, it depends on what kinds. In mortgages, we're seeing the people just not getting the mortgages. And in auto loans, presumably, they're going to pay a lot more. But frankly, we need to turn into savers, and not being able to use debt and access debt. We would have all been much better off if we hadn't used this debt as much debt liberally as we had.
The bottom line, if you have credit cards, try to pay as much of it down as you can, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks,
Absolutely.
Catherine. Appreciate it. Catherine Austin Fitz. The iPhone, the new one, the 4, widely reported in its death grip problems, apparently are very real. Consumer Reports claims that the not-for-profit group, by the way, has decided not to recommend the latest iPhone 4 for those who have already snatched it up. They say use duct tape around it. On the official Consumer Reports blog, an analyst says he tested 3 iPhone 4 handsets in a controlled environment of a radio frequency isolation chamber. So it should have worked fine. He said it dropped like crazy. Researchers found that if you touch the iPhone 4 in a specific spot on the lower left edge of the handset, the cellular signal can significantly degrade enough to cause you to lose your connection altogether, especially if you're in a weak signal area. A physicist at the University of Padua in Italy has said in his blog that there's been talk coming out of the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory in Batavia, Illinois, that the Higgs, the God particle, has been discovered. The Tevatron, the huge particle accelerator at Fermi, the most powerful in the world after the Large Hadron Collider near France and Switzerland, is expected to be retired when the CERN accelerator becomes fully operational, but may have already struck a final blow before it becomes obsolete. In his blog post, the physicist goes on to say that he has heard from 2 different sources that the experiment at the Tevatron is about to release some evidence of the Higgs boson signal. Now, this is the last of the particles by the standard model of particle physics yet to be found. It is said to explain why other particles have mass, and its discovery would confirm the standard model. If its existence is ruled out altogether, then they say other less popular theories will have to be examined. And apparently there's going to be a hearing in Paris on the 22nd, and this may get released, so we shall see. Up next, David Sirita joins us. We will talk with him about many things, including toxic rain down by the Gulf of Mexico. David's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. David Sirita, he's been an ecologist, a spiritual explorer, a space scientist for decades, regular guest here on Coast to Coast AM, and here he is to talk about some of the things that have been going on in the Gulf and some other regions. Hey, David, welcome back.
Good evening, George. Thank you for having me on your show, and good evening, everybody.
What have you uncovered about this Gulf spill and what's happening in the atmosphere with toxic rain?
Well, the toxic rain issue, you know, being number one, that on PBS.org, we have evidence from worst-case expert scenarios that we've passed 300 million gallons of crude oil spilled into the Gulf, not to mention how much natural gas is also in the atmosphere. So what we're seeing is a volatile situation with warmer and warmer waters as we approach August and we, you know, move through July, and we're coming into hurricane season. But there's another phenomena happening, and that is the highly toxic chemicals in the crude oil are evaporating into the atmosphere. And some of those chemicals, I just want to go over some of them from the National Library of Medicine Toxic Town website, because a lot of people don't know what we're breathing, and then we're going to discuss how far these chemicals are traveling.
Okay.
Really going to shock you. But benzene first has been talked about a lot, and this chemical now it's been accepted that you can have 5 parts per billion in the air and it not be harmful. But now we're getting reports in certain areas of 3,000 parts per billion, 1,500 parts per billion fluctuating in the Gulf region. So we have levels of benzene that are enough, according to the National Library of Medicine. It actually states breathing very high levels of benzene or eating or drinking foods contaminated with high levels of benzene can cause death. And it can cause lung cancer, and it can cause convulsions and dizziness and paralysis. So we're already seeing reports actually in very small town newspapers in Texas of people dying from having swam in the Gulf waters. We have chromium, iron, mercury, the deadly chemical mercury in the fuel, actually in the fuel itself. Toluene, another very deadly chemical, and sulfur dioxides, which are actually just as volatile and just as deadly.
Of course, yeah.
So we're talking about levels that are so high. We have 300 million gallons of the fuel sitting there, and we have some potentially good today that they're capping the well, but we're sitting on top of a toxic time bomb here that is largely being ignored. And from my sources inside of the NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, all of the employees and all of the department heads in there with all of their PhDs are just ignoring the facts of evaporation, what reports are starting to appear on YouTube. And when I started to see some of these reports, you know, the first report I saw was from a farmer in North Carolina or South Carolina. And, you know, one thing I know from being a tree planter and combed the earth for 22 years myself is that farmers know more about what's happening in the earth, in the land, than anybody with a PhD sitting there with a piece of paper. And that is one of the problems my source in NOAA is saying, is these people are not even awake. I send her all these reports, all the videos, and we're about to go into the areas that are being affected.
Now, David, if this cap works, will this toxic rain and other environmental problems continue? And if so, for how long?
They will absolutely continue. And if you follow the Gulf Stream, where you see the flow of warm air, you know, following the ocean currents all the way out of the Gulf, around the southern tip of Florida, all the way up the eastern seaboard, you'll see where the fuel is going to be carried and where the fumes are going to be carried. In fact, someone sent me a video from the, you know, the FLIR cameras that were used to, in Mexico, they saw UFOs on the forward-looking infrared cameras.
Yeah.
Those cameras, they have special cameras there that can see evaporation happening live. In fact, there was a news report on the news of the camera being used at a gas station, and the customers were just shocked looking through the lens and seeing how much vapor is evaporating when you're filling up your tank. Well, those hydrocarbons and fuels and mercury and benzene and sulfur dioxide are evaporating off of the crude. And the rate of evaporation, the warmer the water gets, the higher the evaporation. Now, those fumes are, you're talking about, you know, cubic volumes in millions of cubic meters of evaporated fuel floating in the atmosphere, just waiting for a weather system to come in, pick up those moisture droplets, and start carrying them north.
Now, does this stuff all go up into a cloud-like formation, David, or how does it drop down on us?
Well, first, it just goes into the humidity factor in the air, and being the tropics and Florida, you're talking about high levels and levels of benzene that are so high that if you breathe it even locally, you could actually die over a period of time. But and the period of time doesn't have to be that long. I mean, we're already seeing, you know, secret videos on YouTube of oil spill workers being carried away in ambulances that appear to be either critically ill or dying. And the police assisting British Petroleum in the cover-up of that process. And that point alone really disturbed me, because you're seeing a corporation usurping a government body, a government entity, which is illegal and unconstitutional. And you see this woman with her camera, and she's not afraid of this, you know, 6'4" police officer trying to get her out of the way from seeing this oil spill worker, an African American, being carried away and probably near his death. We know from reports on the Exxon Valdez spill, which was a fraction of this spill, only 11 million gallons as opposed to 300 million gallons.
A lot of people got sick.
Most of the workers didn't live past 50. So let's look at where the reports are coming from. I'm seeing YouTube reports from North Carolina, South Carolina, all over Florida, all over the state of Atlanta, Texas. You're seeing leaves after a rain burning holes and burning and scorching the plants. You're seeing organic farmers in the Midwest, literally in the Mid-East West, you're seeing their entire corn crop destroyed.
It's going up that far?
Even further. Wait till you see how far we go. We have a report from North Dakota on the Canadian border.
Oh, my.
And what they're seeing is dead fish over the lake. Now, let's stop there, because all the fish are dying in North Dakota in the lakes. And all of the 4th of July fishermen were shocked when they showed up with their fishing rods and there's all the fish are dead. And there's fuel, a thin layer of oily film on the surface of the water. Now, how the heck did these fumes get all the way to North Dakota and then Ontario, Canada? The same reports.
That's scary. David, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We'll come right back with you. David's website is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. And those of you who continue to email, you know the email address. Those of you brand new to the program, it's george@coast2coastam.com. I'll be right back. Well, it's a floating format tonight, so next hour we'll take phone calls with David Sarita about this toxic rain that we're talking about. And then later on in the program, we're going to be talking about OBE evidence for the existence of Down Under, and I don't mean Australia. We'll be back in a moment with David Sarita on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We're with David Sarita. David, we were talking about just how far this stuff can go, and apparently it's going all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, the report I have is from Columbus, North Dakota, Short Creek Dam, where they found an oily film floating on the top of the reservoir water after a rain, and all the fish were dead, and nobody went swimming. The water quality apparently was so bad. Now, remember, see, we see all the fish dead there. Now, our friend James Fox went into the Gulf, took water samples out of the Gulf water, the ocean water, had it tested at an independent lab, and found the parts per million, let alone billion, were 150 times the levels needed to kill fish. So you have levels of these toxic chemicals we talked about, 150 times the levels needed to kill fish, let alone humans, evaporating into the weather systems and going right up the center of Texas, all the way straight up the middle through the Great Plains to North Dakota and east. I mean, we're getting reports from all over. And that's why we know this isn't just a local phenomena from a local problem. We're seeing the same burning of the leaves, dead fish, and the destruction of whole crops as these chemicals are raining down all over the Midwest to the eastern United States.
And people are breathing this, too.
And people are breathing it. And what's, you know, first, you know, this is very, very scary. And then we're going to talk about what we can actually do about the problem, because there really is something we can do. But the first thing is, you know, when I submitted the reports to NOAA and my sources at Boeing and at Lockheed, the first thing is when these, you know, employees pass it on to their bosses, oh, this is just a myth because it's an isolated incident. But when the reports keep coming in, we really have to wake up, because what we're looking at here is the pollution of our waters, the mutation of all of the biology in those waters. Humans cannot drink from their water tables from the toxic rains, which means virtually the entire eastern United States, or, you know, right pretty much east of Texas, straight up the middle. And eventually, you could see cancer epidemics if we don't solve the problem right away. And the first thing is to acknowledge, in science, you never turn your back on data. You never say, oh, that's, you know, I don't want to look at that data because it's bad data and it's going to make me look bad. We're talking about a possible cancer epidemic from the entire half of the country.
You know, it's like some people, they don't want to go to the doctor, David, because they don't want to hear what the doctor may tell them.
Exactly. I mean, but when you see media being turned away, I mean, James Fox is, you know, I've been staying in touch with him, and I'm sure you have too, on the Gulf situation. You're seeing camera crews being turned away by the police, and they have every right to have their cameras there, by a corporation that has usurped our government offices, you know, the police, the FBI, and the military. The military is escorting airplanes out of the airspace that have a right to be there. Who hired them? Who gave them permission to do that?
Have you heard that ships are being told, military ships are being told to get out of the area?
Now, this is the big exodus that's happening. We're seeing reports of military ships leaving the Gulf suddenly. We're seeing reports in Florida that no one can get a U-Haul because people are trying to move to get out of there because they know what's already happening. I mean, just from the local air quality, let alone how far this stuff is traveling, and they're trying to move west. And so, but you're seeing a president who just says, literally, you can see him verbatim saying that the air quality is fine and the water is fine. And so that's why kids are swimming in the water. And then they're going to the hospital, and they're winding up in the hospitals with lung disease, you know, lung problems, and even death in certain places.
Is anybody else investigating this, David, in terms of?
Well, it's really thanks to the internet. It's thanks to the American people with video cameras, because there is one news channel, and I sent a link to Lisa that shows the actual news channel that reported the toxic rains, but they're saying we don't know where they're coming from. You see, again, as if it's an isolated incident. But when you look at these farmers who have been looking at rains for aeons, I mean, for, you know, a human lifespan and their grandfather's lifespan and their great-grandfather's lifespan, they know everything that's going on in the ecology. And when they see oily film, you know, in their water glass, and then they see it in the crops and all the crops are dying, they know. So here's what I think everybody should do. If you live Texas east, right up the middle, I'm talking South Dakota, North Dakota, Kansas, Oklahoma east, get a glass, a clean glass, and set it out when it rains. And then the next morning, collect the glass and look at the water. If it's murky, if it's even slightly discolored, have it tested. Make a little video and send it to NOAA, send it to your congressman. And we need to do this in droves because this, you know, the reason I'm wanting to go on Coast to Coast tonight, and thank you for having me on in short notice, is to tell people that we need to wake up because this is the potential for the largest cancer epidemic we've ever seen. We know that these chemicals, if you ingest them through breathing or through drinking the water, you're to be in serious, serious trouble. It's a very, very high-risk situation.
But, well, the first thing they have to do, David, they got to stop this leak.
Yeah, that's the first thing. And here's what I think in their strategy. I mean, I have connections everywhere in the military. I have a friend who works at Boeing, and I tried getting, you know, some of these non-toxic solutions to him. I tried getting him my connection to NOAA, who does so much good work, and thank you very much for all the work. And what we're seeing is there's a total emphasis on capping the well. How are we going to cap this well? Why don't we know how to cap it, and why didn't we know how to cap it before the incident even took place? Well, from my connection at Lockheed Martin, our friend Boyd Bushman, I've mentioned many times, he told me in an email on July the 6th, in 10 days, the oil well will be capped. He didn't say we're trying a new technique. He said it will be capped, and I thought, how could he know that? Because here we are, you know, July 13th, pretty much, and we've got the most successful cap to date. Now, we still don't know.
Let's hope it works.
Let's hope it works. But the emphasis has been from the admiral on the oil spill. Let's just forget about the marshes, forget about the wildlife, forget about the people. Let's just cap the well. And if I were the admiral in charge, I would have had an army of these natural non-toxic solutions placed on the oil before it hit the coastlines, not after and not during. And what we're seeing now is all of the focus is on capping the well, which is good, but we need just as much attention on the beaches and the people and the whole marshlands and the ecology, and that has not happened at all. That is not all of the natural non-toxic solutions are being turned down. And one of the things I heard it from, this came from the general in charge of the spill, well, we don't want all of that, you know, cotton waste fluff floating around. So you don't want the cotton waste floating around, even though it absorbs the oil, and it won't float around because it's going to be wet. But you don't have a solution. You didn't deploy another solution and solve the problem. So we have a failure here. And now, as I've said before, the fumes in the Gulf that are evaporating and from fuel that's still sitting there and will be sitting there for months and months to come.
Sure.
That fuel poses the greatest threat.
I mean, the immediate cleanup of the beaches, we can do that later. We have to be able to stop this, get the environment cleaned up in terms of the air we breathe, and then start cleaning up.
Yeah, I mean, we could have did it all. We could have hit all fronts at the same time, which is what I would have done. But they've turned down too many good ideas.
Yeah, they seem to be very resistant to other ideas. You know, I've got a person who's been emailing me plans for capping this, and he's frustrated because nobody wants to listen to him. Nobody will. And, you know, you call BP, and they've got these employees just answering the phone, and, you know, everybody's got an idea, but one of them may actually work, but they don't want to listen to anybody.
They don't want to listen to anybody, and that is our government's fault, that they're not listening, and they're not, you know, if they had a better solution, like they had this young, you know, 12-year-old girl on CNN who came up with a brilliant solution to plug the wellhead. And all these, you know, super PhDs are sitting there scratching their heads thinking, why didn't we think of that? But they didn't deploy her idea, even though it probably would have worked.
Yeah, there's been talk about, you know, mass exits from one region to another. But I got to tell you, David, to me, that's not realistic. I just don't see people picking up, leaving their homes, what homes they may own right now, leaving their jobs, going someplace else. They can't do it. They're stuck.
Well, you're right. Most people can't afford to do it. Only the rich can afford to do that. So that's why I suggest if you live in the area, get a glass, test your water, use really good water purifiers in rows, because one pass through a filter is not going to clean your water if you have toxic rains in your area going into your water supplies and your aquifers. But we have months ahead of us. I mean, the month of August is sure to bring a huge amount of volume of rain into the Gulf and all of the, you know, all of the different eastern United States, depending on where those storms travel.
Is the toxicity primarily the chemicals they've been using? Because oil by itself, you know, is organic. I mean, do you see that as the problem, or is it the chemicals they've dumped into it?
That's a really good question, because firstly, yes, the natural crude oil has benzene, chromium, mercury, you know, toluene, sulfur dioxides, and other volatile organic compounds. But the Brexit, which BP is illegally spraying into the Gulf, helps evaporate those fuels faster, which is bad for what we're talking about. But according to what James Vaux found, the chemicals in the Corexit are utterly deadly. I mean, can cause bleeding of the kidneys and you know, total meltdown of your organs inside of your body if you get enough of your system. So it's really outrageous that they were allowed to use that. I mean, the only thing that's going to survive in the Gulf, from what I can see with all of these chemicals, are probably the genetically modified salmon you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And they'll
grow to be about 12 feet long.
And that, yeah, you know, it's funny.
Two heads.
You know, Lake Mead and also Lake Powell, I was talking to some people who have been established on the lake, you know, since the 1950s. And the Forest Service brought in bass, thinking, oh, how cool would it be to bring in another fish when they already had beautiful freshwater salmon and trout, and the bass ate all of the salmon. So that's what happens when you do things like, you know, you create a mutated salmon, and next thing you know, it's going to come in and eat everything in sight.
Tell me about this study at the University of Irvine.
Okay, so this is where we're coming into solutions. I mean, and this is going to blow people's minds. I've just become, you know, aware of this study from Cloud Swanson's book. It's a study done at the university level at the University of California at Irvine, where I worked for years on nuclear fusion with Glenn Seaborg, Bogdan Maglich, Murray Gell, and Norman Rostocker, all, you know, award-winning physicists. And so we talked today. I talked to Dr. Joey Jones, and he's a PhD in physics. He's a professor of radiation therapies and medicine, I believe. And this study is just, it's just going to knock your socks off. I mean, for the Coast to Coast audience, I mean, it doesn't, so outrageous. When you hear about it, it seems like science fiction, but it's really happening in our top universities. And here's what it is. Dr. Joey Jones decided to do an experiment on the power of the mind over healing human cells that were exposed to the most deadly possible thing you could do, even far worse than chemistry or toxic fumes, what we're talking about. He exposed these cells to a lethal dose of gamma nuclear radiation. Gamma radiation, which you never see gammas coming out of the sun. You may see some X-rays coming out of the sun. But gamma radiation is so deadly that anything that's exposed to it is sure to die. For sure, it's going to die if you get a lethal dose of gamma. So what he did is he exposed these cells, and he did different experiments over and over and over again with human intention using a pranic healing energy on the cells. And the results are so astounding. I mean, they're not just a little bit of an improvement. There's a radical improvement with the test that he did. And the first thing he did is just do pranic healing to the cells that were exposed to radiation after they were exposed to the radiation. Other cells, he did it before they were exposed to radiation. And then another set he did before and after pranic healing on the cells exposed to the nuclear radiation. And then the last test he did, and again, he did this over and over and over again to eliminate the possibility of chance. And this is really profound what I'm going to share with everybody, because it will give you a secret how to heal yourself. And then How to Heal the Gulf. The last one was With a Karmic Gift. And what that means is he exposed the cells to the lethal dose of radiation, and then he did the pranic healing on the cells with pulling out a credit card and donating money to a cause that he really cared about, that the healer really resonated with. So there was a lot of heart there. And that yielded over 40% improvement of the life of the cells. 40%, not 0.1%, which is what you would think with a psychic experiment.
Right.
40%. And this is at a major, major university where some of the greatest physicists in the world were working. And I was there. I was there. I spent, you know, almost a decade there. So I asked him today, I said, this is really happening, isn't it? And, you know, what do other physicists think about what you're doing? I mean, what does Norman Rostocker, who won the Maxwell Prize in physics, think? And he said, they don't know. They don't
They're baffled,
know
aren't they?
That it's really happening. Now, this is a worst-case scenario. You're talking about lethal dose of gamma radiation. Now, retreating back from that, cancer, the studies they did, they literally reversed it in 70% of the cases with lab rats and other experiments. With transforming toxic water, utterly a breeze compared to what we're talking about with the lethal dose of gamma radiation. So when I thought about this, I thought, who's going to believe this? Who's going to believe that this is happening at top universities with some of the best physicists in the country? So what it gives me the idea to do is, we know about the power of the mind over water and hydrogen. We know that if we get millions of people tonight to think of the waters in the Gulf and all those little moisture follicles floating in the air carrying these toxic chemicals, can we telepathically right now for the next week, every day, all of us really make a commitment? Because this, our lives are at stake here. Our lives are really at stake with these chemicals raining down in our soils and mutating our food and our water and our frogs and every little critter that lives in under the sun is going to be affected by these chemicals if we don't do something. You know, I really cautiously suggest that everyone get water purification systems first, and the second, I really believe in this power of this global consciousness, that we lens our minds, our millions of minds right now, and we really communicate to the dolphins and the whales and the water droplets in the Gulf right now, and we send them our most heartfelt feelings of transformation and asking that water to transform and to not rain down and to move into a more stable direction on our planet where it can heal, where that water can heal over time and not rain down on us. I really believe if we did that every night and we really did it, we will see results. We will actually see results. If we're already a victim of the toxic rains right now, I ask people that you meditate, you really truly meditate and in your own form of meditation and really believe. You know, one of the things that a lot of people in mysticism say that is missing in the formula, that whether the person who wants to be healed actually believes. And if they don't believe, well, that means that it's not necessarily going to happen. But that belief factor needs to be there.
Well, it does, but unless people are so overwhelmingly strong, they can overcome that, can't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what the science is there for. The science is there because, and it takes away your doubt. It says if scientists did this in a laboratory and these are the verifiable results, and he did the experiment over and over and over again to remove the possibility of chance, it means that what I'm telling you right now is not hocus pocus. It's not hokey science. This really can happen, and maybe this is the possibility for us to all prove it to ourselves, that we can really do this.
All right, David, I want to take phone calls with you next hour when we come back, and also a few more tips on what people can do and how we can do this. Maybe we can organize some kind of test where we get water samples, then do this, and then test it again. Is that possible?
Right, that's another way to do it, yeah. If you have toxic water in your glass and you can verify it at a lab, then do the experiment before and after. Do it. The more people that are meditating on the water, the effects will be stronger.
All right, well, stay with us. David Sirita, our special guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, You've been calling all hour. We'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. And then following David's appearance and your phone calls, we'll be talking about OBEs and the existence of hell.